You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
On this episode of Cheesehead Radio,
thanks to the Jumbotron, the Packers are 2-1.
And David Bakhtiari is back on the field.
3 games in, how's that Adams trade working out?
And Clay Matthews waxes poetic.
4 quarters of Packers talk.
Right here on
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. It is time for some Packers news, fun, and frivolity here on Cheesehead Radio. Now in our 13th season doing this crazy thing. As usual, our esteemed guest hosts tonight are C. DeAngeli of Packers Talk, known as Tundra Vision on Twitter, Kelly Hodgson of Cheesehead Radio, known as That Packer Girl on Twitter, and lastly, little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can find me at JerseyAlGBP on Twitter. Our longtime friends at Ticket King are back as official sponsors of Cheesehead Radio and all the Packers Talk podcasts. Ticket King has been in business for more than 25 years in Wisconsin and has offices across the street from Lambeau Field and in Milwaukee. For Packers tickets, visit their website today at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. And that would be it for the preliminaries. Let's get this show on the road.
So you know I can tell you're not actually from Milwaukee, right?
Well, gee, that's a you good guess.
You pronounce the L. No one pronounces
the L. He's got a Jersey accent.
I pronounce it the right way. Milwaukee.
No, if you're from
say Milwaukee. Milwaukee.
But you're not from. I was born in Milwaukee. So
you were?
I was.
I never knew that.
Yeah, born in Milwaukee, and you don't pronounce the L. It's just Milwaukee.
Milwaukee? I'm from Green Bay, and it's Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, it's not from Milwaukee if you're from
Green
Bay.
You can't account for CD, Kelly. Don't worry about it.
No, sorry.
All the listeners from Milwaukee are going like, yep. Trust me, you don't want to get into an argument with him about water fountains versus bubblers.
It is a bubbler.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous, the whole bubbler thing.
Go back to Jersey, it's a bubbler.
That is ridiculous.
All right, let's get you two back on track here. The Green Bay Packers end up pulling out a narrow, low-scoring affair against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Came down to the wire, as somebody predicted last week, that we would be biting our fingernails right up to those last minutes as Tom Brady would come very close, and he did. What do you guys think? How did this
sweet schadenfreude, eat it, Brady.
You were kind of happy about that, were you?
I was kind of, yeah.
So the offense in particular, when we saw this game start, was just cruising. And then we had this fumble near the goal line, and suddenly the Packers didn't score again for the remaining two and a half quarters of the game. What happened there?
Well, Tampa Bay at halftime decided to make some changes in their defense. They were making the mistake of blitzing Rodgers in the first early in the game, and of course, you know, that's something that most teams don't do because he will take advantage of you, and that's what was happening. So they got smart at halftime, and they made their changes. They went to, you know, more of a man coverage type deal. And what happened after that is the Packers still kept doing the same thing. They didn't adjust to the adjustments, which has kind of been a bone of contention with this Packers team for a few years now. So, you know, to summarize it all, you know, they basically played right into Tampa Bay's hands the second half, and that's why they came up empty.
I liked what I saw first half. I liked the fact that Romeo Doubs got his first touchdown. Welcome to the big leagues, big guy. And that he was targeted, what was it, 8 times, which shows me Rodgers is willing to give these rookies a fair shake. But if the defense alters things, we need to respond in kind, or Rodgers ends up flat on his back. And that's what you saw second half. He was getting sacked suddenly and he wasn't going anywhere. So that was frustrating. And I really would wish that LaFleur and company would really pay attention to this with the game moving forward. They really have to adjust the defenses if they figure us out.
Okay. A lot of heroic, at least in the first quarter and a half or so, some pretty heroic plays. As you said, Romeo Doubs had really a fantastic game, especially in that first half. You know, pretty much up until that Aaron Jones fumble, which a little out of character for Aaron Jones. But Aaron Jones did seem to get... Were you guys feeling like he was the back to go to that game? We kind of talked last week a little bit about how sometimes Dylan and Jones may match up better. Was he the right choice for that game, or should they have fed Dylan a little bit more?
No, I think it was definitely Jones' type of game. Dylan really, you know, he didn't really have a tremendous amount of success. He, when they went to him, a lot of times it was like 1 or 2 yard gains, you know. And whereas Jones was able to come up with a few more yards. I mean, the Tampa defense is really good against the run. We know that from the last times we've played them. So it's not a surprise that they didn't have as much success running the ball as they did, you know, previous week. But for that type of defense, you need a shiftier back that can break a tackle and find a hole where maybe it wasn't there before, as opposed to just a power back like Dylan. So I think it was, to answer your question in a very long way, yes, Aaron Jones was the right choice.
And also because he's a receiving back, too. So that's one thing where Quantzilla really doesn't rise to the top. That's definitely Jones's wheelhouse. So... yeah, I would have liked to have seen that a little bit more.
I was going to say, not that you saw much of that.
No, but I would have liked to have seen.
It that would be would nice.
Would have been how they could have adjusted. It's early in the season. We still won, so I'm not going to be hypercritical, but I would like to see them be a little more flexible in games moving forward.
Okay. Well, moving on to the defense, there were some really great performances throughout much of the game. We saw Rasul Douglas have a couple of really nice series there where he really made some things happen. Nixon stepping in for an injured Jair Alexander, playing pretty solid as well. one guy you tend not to hear a lot about is Eric Stokes, and it's usually a good thing because they're not throwing at him. He's not giving up a whole lot. So, you know, you add that in with Quay Walker. Kenny Clark had a great game. Overall, it's a really good defensive stand, limiting Tom Brady, yes, with his own limited offensive line and wide receiver core. But regardless, it was still a pretty good showing.
And I know some of you guys will come in and talk about the questionable tactics, so the final drive. But there's no denying how that final play played on going for two played out. That volleyball-like tip was just a thing of beauty.
I think that's an interesting conversation a lot of people have had, you know, because the old standard thing is you've played well all game and then you go into a prevent defense on the last drive with Tom Brady. Is that your best strategy?
Yeah, my problem with it was, A, that there was way too much time left. There was over 3 minutes on the clock, and your quarterback is Tom Brady. To me, those two things equal not the right circumstance to do what you did. You know, if there had been a minute 20 on the clock and some other quarterback, you know what? Make that guy, you know, bring him, prove that he can lead a team down the field and score a touchdown with a minute and 20 left or whatever. We know Brady can do it with 3 minutes left, okay? And you play in prevent. So you just handed him the opportunity to score a touchdown and he did it. So there are times when the prevent makes sense. I don't think the circumstances in this case made sense.
Especially when the margin, the points margin was as small as it was. You know, if you're up by a couple touchdowns, yeah, you can kind of slow up a little bit.
If it was a two-score game, that's another time also you could have done it, right? But
because if Brady didn't have that mental error, and we'll talk about that in a little bit with Rodgers actually being the smarter of the two, I never want to bet against Brady on a 2-point conversion. He's proven over and over again he can get it done. And that was a tense final play from them. And we shouldn't have, the Packers should not have been in a position where we were like, oh God, he's going to score 2 points.
So I'll argue with you just a little bit. Because if you look at Tom Brady on that last drive, he had one other spurt like this during the game where he just suddenly became prime Tom Brady. apparently passing to Gronk and Randy Moss and everyone else, he was not missing a pass on that final drive. I mean, he was hit. I mean, I was looking at him. I mean, he was hitting these passes out of nowhere. There's something to be said. And I know Matt LaFleur, we talked about this a lot after week one and how he kind of approaches his defense, playing that two shell, which really does keep action in front of you. And what it did is it stretches out that drive, eats up the clock, absolutely. But it's kind of that bend but don't break. And with the bend but don't break, yep, they might get down the field, use up the clock. And if you can make the stop at the end, that's great. My fear is if they went into man coverage in a blitzing type situation or playing a little more aggressively, passes he completed for short gains might have just been two passes downfield for touchdowns. So I don't know, because we don't know just what it would be like the other way, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody is saying blitz or change anything that they were doing. You know, I'm just saying, just keep playing the way you were playing.
It doesn't matter what plays he gets. He still managed to move the ball. He was still Tom Brady of old.
Well, this is my point. We made it easy, all right?
Totally made it easy. It was frustrating.
You're like, oh, he was hitting every pass. Well, yeah, they were 5-yard passes. They were 8-yard passes.
Yeah.
They were swing pass to Fournette when nobody covered him. Of course he was hitting every pass. I don't have confidence that he could have hit a 25-yard pass downfield that was contested. Do I have confidence that he could do that, or do I have more confidence that he can dink and dunk his way down the field? It would be the latter. So that's my whole point there, is we made it easy.
And that really reminded me of a McCarthy era bend but don't break defense. It's like, why is it necessary to let off the gas at the end? Because where is this all gas, no break mantra from LaFleur if they're just going to be like, okay, we'll let you march down and hopefully we'll hold them off at the end?
Well, let's also be realistic that the defense has to look and say the offense has not generated anything since the second quarter. So if they do give up a huge play, chances are the offense is not going to, you know, be able to get a first down. And then he gets another possession. So I don't know. I agree with you,
Al. I'm not sure I followed that.
If they go into a more attacking defense and instead of hitting like 5 out of 5 short passes, he hits 1 out of 4 long passes, but the one pass is for a touchdown. Now maybe there's 2 minutes left on the clock. The Packers can't get off the field, or they can't stay on the field. They have to get off the field. They punt, and now Brady has another possession before the end of the game. You see what I'm saying?
That's a lot of suppositions.
I specialize
so in supposition. So it wasn't.
It was actually an upper-level class in supposition.
You created an entire theoretical scenario.
I do. But
this is two areas of the Packers have air.
Why I don't disagree with it completely. It wasn't a pure prevent defense. It's pretty much that traditional two shell, just playing a little further back than they have been, but they kept
playing 10 yards off the receivers. Why do that?
So you don't get beat behind.
To make us frustrated.
Why do that? It's 3 minutes left and it's Tom Brady.
True. And he kept everything in front of you. The big thing I think that stands out is, you're right, this could have been, you know, it wasn't going to be terrible because, yeah, he had to complete a 2-point conversion just to tie and potentially put the game into overtime. But in the most unlikely of situations, Tom Brady, the quote-unquote greatest of all time, amazing quarterback, walks on water, etc., gets a delay of game penalty on the 2-point conversion. I mean, it goes and becomes this really long play, and we bat it down, and it's a great, great win for the Packers. But wow, how does this happen to Tom Brady of all people?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can make the excuse that he had a bunch of new receivers out there, right? And maybe they weren't lined up where they should have been, although they were going to run the ball anyway. So I'm not quite sure, you know, how that happens either.
But maybe it was just the refs finally saying, okay, yeah, you're Tom Brady, but you did delay a game. We're not going to give you a pass this time.
Okay. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah, there you go.
Rodgers claimed that it was a delay game the play before that, which I think was probably right.
Again, it doesn't get called as much as it should, and it happens to Rodgers too all the time. He gets away with it a lot,
right? So we don't really want the refs being really on top of that too much as Packers fans, because that wouldn't be good for us. So really, we should kind of be content with the way the refs are handling that.
But for everyone always says, oh, Brady gets all the calls. There's a pass interference call. Of course, Brady gets all the calls. No, this Brody doesn't get all the calls all the time.
Well, if you want to look at the calls that he got, you could look at about the dozen holding penalties that weren't called, with our guys getting mugged, choked around the neck, pulled to the ground.
Kenny Clark dragged down by his jersey.
Yeah. Two guys bringing a guy, it's crazy. But that there's a good example of the let's protect Tom Brady thing going on.
I think the funny part is, regardless, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are now reviewing their Jumbotron procedures to make sure nothing like this ever happens again.
Right?
Literally, like, so he's got them all freaked
mouth.
Out that.
No.
But let's give also a lot of credit to our special team.
Oh my goodness.
Our punter is special teams player of the week. When has that happened before? Not in a long time.
Yeah. When has any of our special teams players been special team player of the week?
Yeah.
Never mind the punter.
And I think that, you guys know I've been dealing with this since my Sean Slocum PTSD all those years ago.
We all have PTSD from that.
Has not gotten better. But, remember we were kind of making a little fun of J.K. Scott because he was going to be, quote unquote, the weapon when we drafted him. And now, we got McConnell, I think is his name.
O'Donnell.
O'Donnell. Close. And the guy's a nuke. I mean, this guy.
It's like, bam,
turned the field position battle completely around.
Yeah. He wasn't like that for the Bears. So,
no, it was not. So
yeah, so it was it the coaching again? Is it Bisaccia saw something, changed something? Who knows? But he wasn't this good for the Bears, put it that way.
No, absolutely.
But just remember,
not.
And this was the interesting statement of the week, they're not gunners, they're flyers.
Well, they do fly.
They do fly. There is some speed to them now, which is actually very refreshing.
Yeah. Eli Berkovitz on Twitter. He put together a clip of every David Bakhtiari snap, which was interesting. And I said to him, you know what I'd really like to see? I'd like to see a clip of every punt that the Packers have made this season so far, because I'd like to see how in the world Rudy Ford gets down to the punt returner the first every time. How does he get around the players?
Supersonic speed.
But it's not just speed. He did it. He put together a clip. If you look up at my polluted mindset post today on Cheesehead TV, I put it in there. He's got Devontae moves off the ball. I swear to God, if he could catch, he'd be a Devontae Adams with speed.
Wow.
But he's
you
more
see
like
him. And a lot of times they put two guys on him. And he gets
but it's a certain skill set, though. It's like a Jarrett Bush.
Yeah. Well, no, it's way beyond Jarrett Bush. It's like
Jarrett Bush and
way beyond.
Yeah, but he's got the speed and he's got the skills.
The thing is, he's got these moves right off the snap that gets him at the very least even with the guy that's on him, right? And once he's even with the guy that's on him, it's a foot race and it's over. It's just amazing. If you watch that, it's really interesting to see how he does it. And not to take anything away from some of the other guys. Like on the other side, Keyshawn Nixon, he's been doing a great job too.
He's like a heat-seeking missile. It's just fun to watch.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'll take us to the end of the first quarter, which lasted, I believe, 40 minutes. So we're going to move on.
Definitely a win.
Definitely a win.
Anytime we can beat Brady, it's a win.
Yes. We're going to move on to the second quarter. Just some follow-ups, I guess, in the game moving forward. But I think one of the best things we got to talk about, and of course, we didn't even talk about it last week because we didn't even think it was going to be possible. We didn't think the whole David Bakhtiari thing was even going to be a thing. We were still, of course, talking in hypothetical terms, is he ever going to play again? Is he ever going to be the David Bakhtiari we've ever known?
All of us, somebody in particular was.
Okay, so
that,
David, if you're
speak
listening,
speak up if you're.
David, if you were listening, I am very sorry that I doubted you. Please accept my humble apologies. I was pleasantly surprised. I'm glad you kicked butt. Keep doing it, buddy.
CD, remember when we used to do the I was wrong bit?
Yes, I was wrong.
Remember that?
Kelly
everybody
was wrong.
Every week had to come up with something and explain, and then at the very end say, but I was wrong.
But I was wrong. Will admit, I'm thrilled that
happily
I was
wrong. Right? Of course. Happily
wrong. So, of course, he's listed the questionable with a knee as always. But I was pleasantly surprised. And he didn't just play. He played exceptionally well.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to move to the next thing and say, obviously, he didn't play every snap, right? He was supposed to be alternating series with Yosh, but even that wasn't quite right because he sat for a couple of series in a row. But, you know, they were just playing it smart, and I have no problem with them doing that. Whether he'll play the entire game next week or not, most people are saying he will. I'd be fine if they still kept him out a series or two here and there, you know, and just reduce the odds of some kind of, something bad happening until he really 100%.
And if that helps build him back to being full-time, I'm okay with that as well. You know, ease him back into it. Don't overtax the knee, because we don't necessarily need him now. We need him in January.
I think that the idea of working him in and the way they're handling him during practice, they're kind of doing old man procedures with both Bakhtiari and Jenkins, to be honest. Really giving them a lot of time off during the week, as you might have done with, Rodgers or any of these other old veterans that they had for quite a number of years. Really trying to extend the shelf life of these guys.
No doubt. And the plan for Bakhtiari is that he's really only going to practice one day during the week. He's not going to practice on Wednesday. He's going to practice on Thursday. And he's not going to practice on Friday, other than, whatever, maybe individual drills or whatever they want to do with them. But he's not going to actually practice. So they're being as careful as they possibly can. And I am, once again, A-OK with that.
And just a little bit of news there. Pro Football Focus, which, does all the next-gen stats, actually had Bakhtiari in his limited time the highest-rated Packer lineman in pass protection.
Yeah, I mean, nobody gets past them.
No.
Nobody gets past.
So, question for you, Jersey Alas, our offensive line expert that you are.
Yes, okay. Let me put my hat on.
Yes. So, let's say we get Bach back full-time. He's there. Does Jenkins stay at the other tackle position? Do we start looking at Nyman? I mean, how do we get our best five guys out there?
Oh, yeah. No, you leave Jenkins as long as he is okay and healthy. Jenkins stays at right tackle. You want those two bookend tackles is more important, than moving Jenkins into guard and then, moving Yosh over to the right side where he really hasn't played.
Right.
No.
I agree with Al.
Those are shades of what they did, with the 49ers playoff game last year and moving more people around instead of keeping things the way they should have been. So.
No, I agree with Al. I would keep Jenkins on the right. And if you need to rotate, Bakhtiari out, then that's where Nyman has a role.
Yeah, and Yosh becomes the swing tackle. If Jenkins needs to be play a few plays off, or Bakhtiari needs plays off, you got a guy like Yosh who can do it, right? But you leave Jenkins where he is at right tackle, and that solidifies the line.
And this might actually be an innovative way of moving forward instead of just grinding our tackles down, game after game. If they can get a little bit of a break in each game and Nyman can hold it during those plays, I think we can extend the life, so to speak, of Jenkins and Bakhtiari.
Yeah, it's something that really isn't done much, in the NFL. The whole thing about the NFL, the offensive line and continuity and as a group, and they have to play together. So it's something that I don't know if it's frowned upon, but it just hasn't been done much. Doesn't mean that it might not be workable, and maybe the Packers will try and we'll see.
And if you do it with regularity, you will have continuity with it. So I like it as an innovative way to address the issues with the line and reduce the potential for overuse injuries among our tackles. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Oh, yes. Okay, so we're going to go to our practice squad. Last week, Patrick Taylor was raised from our practice squad to the full-man roster, running back. So they did bring in a series of players, a lot of players, actually, and off other practice squads or off the free agent wire for practices. A ton of running backs. But, Jersey, who did they end up signing to the practice squad?
Well, they signed a defensive back, cornerback Corey Ballantyne, who had been drafted by by the New York Giants in 2019. He's a cornerback and a kick returner.
Ooh.
Yeah, so a little more potential help there if needed for the special teams. And obviously with Jair having a little bit of an injury, although it's not supposed to be serious, you want to have some depth and people you can call up in an emergency. So I think that's why. I didn't see if they released somebody from the practice squad or if they had an open spot, so I'm not sure about that. I didn't see anything to that effect. But anyway, Corey Ballantyne.
And final couple points here. Just found this little stat that I thought once again. The Packers have now ranked first in the NFL in third down percentage, allowing the chains to move just 22.5% of the time. That's a pretty good defensive stand, and we've seen this over and over, especially in the last two games.
Terrible last year on this. This was
how bad were we?
Contention. Well, they were ranked 24, and there was like 42% of third downs were converted. So we've completely flipped it around, which is one of the challenges they had last year, and I think they've overcome that, which we were hoping would be the case with this very stout defense.
And last point for the second quarter is our injury report. There's actually not a whole lot of really, really bad news.
It doesn't look bad, right?
Yes. I mean, you think of all of 2021, it was pretty bad every week, you know, with guys on IR, Bach and Jenkins and Jair. A lot of guys limited. Which does not mean they're not necessarily not going to play. In fact, a lot of these guys are planning on playing. A couple new injuries. A.J. Dillon has a new injury to his knee. Jonathan Garvin has a new injury to his hip. But otherwise, some familiar names there. Jair, Bach, Lazard, Mercedes Lewis, Christian Watson were all limited. And as you said, Elton Jenkins is kind of on one of these little do not play, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's out.
All right.
So that'll take us to the end of the second quarter.
Now we're ready.
I would still call it a win, even though we have people on the injury list.
That's okay. It's not a bad injury list. That's a win in itself. And that'll take us to halftime. We'll step in the locker room while you enjoy this message from our sponsor.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field?
Yeah.
If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King.
Oh, yeah.
Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay.
Oh, yeah.
Just go to their website.
Do it.
TheTicketKing.com. Again, that's TheTicketKing.com.
All right, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio. My name is C.D. Angeli, and I am flanked by Kelly Hodgson and Jersey Al Bracco. We're 2-0 coming out of halftime. Pretty good. Let's sit on this lead a little bit. We're going to go into the third quarter. The Davante Adams trade started making a little hullabaloo Sunday, Monday, Tuesday a little bit. Davante Adams doesn't sound too happy, does he, right now?
Frustrated and angry. Expected more. It's not easy to win in this league. We know that. Nobody's naive to the fact that nobody's just going to lay down and give you a victory. But at the end of the day, we expect more and we will do better as we move forward. That sounds like a guy who's frustrated with where he landed. And I kind of feel bad for him, but this was his choice to go there. So I don't feel bad for him at the same time.
Has he talked to his Hall of Fame quarterback about it?
I can tell you. Mr. Carr is not looking anything like a Hall of Fame quarterback.
He is definitely not.
Something that all of us seem to know, except for Davante Adams.
And I get it. He wanted to play with his college QB, and I don't know what the dynamic was with him and Rodgers, but he decided to leave. He's a grown-ass adult. He made the decision, so I only feel bad to a certain extent because they weren't super contenders. Yeah, they were not bad. They're a rising team. But he knew what he was getting into when he signed with them.
Of course.
So the Las Vegas Raiders now sitting at 0-3. The Packers now sitting at 2-1. Now, if we remember, after week one, when the Packers really kind of went in and laid an egg in the Metrodome, everyone was talking about, oh my gosh, how much they missed Davante Adams. He had 100 and something yards receiving his first game.
All right.
Suddenly they're not talking about that.
But they still lost.
They did. But suddenly no one's talking about that much. We're not bringing up Devontae Adams every play anymore because Aaron Rodgers isn't doing that badly.
No, and neither are the Packers rookie receivers. They're doing quite nicely, thank you.
I mentioned this earlier, but this was the game where Romeo Doubs had 8 receptions, correct? Which is the highest of anybody since, like, Devontae, correct?
As a rookie, that's not rookie. Any receiver ever, but just it's a rookie record.
But 8 receptions in any game is a good stat, regardless of whether you're a rookie or not.
Rodgers was talking a little bit on Pat McAfee on Tuesday, and apparently he told him before the game started, hey, today's a great day to catch your first touchdown. There's a little love there. I mean, he's talked very highly about Christian Watson, not quite so much after the first play of the season. But
stop that.
He is fickle. We all know that.
Yes, but he's really taken a shine to this kid.
Well, I think one reason is that Doubs has been healthy and playing the entire time. So Rodgers has had an opportunity to build some of that vaunted trust that he needs, whereas Watson, he only had 2 weeks of practice before the first game.
Right.
And now he's hurt again. So it's been very limited, direct interaction between Rodgers and Watson on the football field. So I think it's only natural that he's going to gush about Romeo Doubs more at this point.
And let's face it, Rodgers knows how to work spin. He's kind of an expert at it. To shut up the whole, but what about Devontae? In the media is to suddenly have a receiver that's young and promising and he trusts. So, of course, he's going to gush about Doubs.
Well, if you remember, I mentioned after week one, and just as a former receiver myself, I understand how important it is to. I was a wingback, yo.
I thought you were a safety.
On defense, derp. We had to play two ways.
Meanwhile, I played soccer.
You're that old.
I am that old. Still two-way. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, I talked a little bit about how Rodgers has to have a particular trust in his receivers for the hands to go away from the body to meet the ball. That you have to go up and get it. And especially that's why he was so afraid to pass those balls, because he wants to put that ball into really, really tight quarters a lot because of his accuracy. And I thought that's one reason week one why he was hesitating to pass, because he didn't trust the receivers to get those hands in those really awkward positions where they might have to go to catch the ball. His quote about Doubs speaks directly to that. And he says, and the best thing about him is he catches the ball all the time. He has that innate ability you love from receivers to be aggressive to the ball and catch up with the hands. And that's exactly what I said week one. And here's what Doubs is doing. And Rodgers loves it. Loves that. That's what he wants from his receivers.
So I would definitely see him being one of the favored receivers this coming week, because he's really earned his trust. And as a rookie, that really says a lot. Cobb is still the old faithful. He's going to go to Cobb when he's desperate. And, that 40-yard pass was just absolutely wonderful. But I think Doubs is the one that's going to be starting to score again and again and again.
So boiling it down to the base, I know there's a couple other guys we can say that were a result of the trade because they had a little extra salary cap space and spread it out. But essentially the trade comes down to the Packers traded Devontae Adams to the Raiders. In exchange, they've gotten Rasul Douglas, Christian Watson, and Quay Walker.
Well, you have to include Devondre Campbell.
And Devondre Campbell.
You have to include Campbell.
Yeah, you have to.
It's a 4-for-1 deal. And you know what? Yeah. Right. This was, they gambled. It was Moneyball. And right now, I would rather have 4 very promising receivers, because I think we can make do without Devontae. We proved it in games when he was hurt last year, which really makes Rodgers spread the offense out. And looking at how stout our defense is, I'm really happy with the 4 defenders we got, or the 3 defenders and Christian Watson that we got out of the deal.
No doubt.
Yeah. So I think, you're going to hear a lot less about this trade, especially if Christian Watson ends up, finally getting off the injury reserve and ends up becoming a great compliment for Doubs. I mean, we may forget completely about some of these veteran receivers, and these guys might just really wipe up the whole league. So that'll take us to the end of the third quarter, and obviously we're going to call this one a win, although personally I have no hatred whatsoever towards Devontae, and I really, really do hope the best for him. I actually want to see him be successful, because I think he was, as Aaron Rodgers likes to say, he was the ultimate Packer. So hopefully he has got some good. Speaking of ultimate Packers,
ultimate fourth quarter.
Clay Matthews, while doing a while doing a tour for, what was it, Tide Detergent or something like that?
Something like that.
Sorry.
Hey, while he's going to make his money where he can.
Sorry, it just sounded funny. Really waxed poetic and made a little bit of news on some of his days with the Packers and kind of waxed poetic on how the ending came for Clay Matthews. I don't know if you guys read about that at all, but what's your thought?
Okay. So what he said, what Matthew said was, based on my discussions after that 2018 season, I thought we were going to continue moving forward. But yeah, in a manner in which it did kind of caught me by surprise. Ultimately, it is what it is. I had fun in my year in LA. It was a blast getting to go home and play with some incredible players. And, you know, he kind of just indicated that he really thought that when the Packers brought Barry in, you know, that they would have brought him back in as well. But there were really no overtures from the Packers at that point. So he was a little disappointed, but, you know, said, OK, it is what it is, so to speak. And now I think he's come to the final conclusion that, you know what, it's time I officially tell people that I am retired. So I think that's where we are now with Clay Matthews.
And I would love to sign him for a day to have him return as a Packer.
Yeah.
But looking at what we had last year, you had the option of re-signing Clay theoretically, but we went with Campbell. And I think that was an upgrade.
Well, of course, you know, he left the year that they brought in the Smith brothers.
Right.
So I think
that's the first reason why he wasn't brought back, right?
But he was also injury prone in the second half of his career. He was out for, you know, good for several games of being out, whether it was a hamstring or whatever. He was very good in those first couple of years, and then he was like overshooting, and there were diminishing returns on compared to his hit against the salary cap. And then you had younger talent that you could bring in. And unfortunately, that's the nature of the game. You know, your time in the NFL is quite limited. The average tenure is 3 years, so he got a lot more out of the average player. But if I had the choice looking at the Smith brothers or Devondre Campbell versus a long-in-the-tooth Clay Matthews, of course I would pick the new generation of linebackers.
Yeah, and I think he understands that as well.
So I would love him.
No hard feelings. So
I would love him to come back and retire as a Packer. I have no ill will for him. I think
sure he will. I'm confident that the Packers will do that for him.
One of my favorite social media posts from him at the end of that is they let him go. So he was with the Rams. He just joined and they drafted this kid named Rashawn Gary. And it was only like a month after Clay had left and they assigned Rashawn Gary number 52.
52, yeah.
And his tweet was, dude, the body ain't even cold yet.
He's got a good sense of humor, which is kind of fun.
It was really nice to have a guy like Clay. If you remember, Clay actually was a player correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he a guy that we adjusted the draft pick, but we sort of got an exchange for Brett Favre and the pick we got from the Jets?
Yeah, he was a second first round.
I seem to recall that that pick was traded up into the first round.
They did trade
because we got BJ Raji and then we got him.
Yeah. So, you know, little things, you know, going around here. Here we are trading up into the round with the old Brett Favre pick to get Clay Matthews. And now here we are, you know, trading up into the first round to get Christian Watson to replace Devontae Adams. So it's just what comes around goes around there every 10 years or so.
And Clay is such a charismatic person. I would hope now that his active NFL career has come to an end, he's somebody I would love to see in a booth just because he's entertaining.
Evaluating, let's just run through around the board here. We've had a couple players who've left the team, like Clay Matthews, that maybe even if it was the time or not, it still just kind of broke our heart. For you, was Clay Matthews the most heartbreaking departure from the team for a guy who went and played somewhere else right away? Or is there another player that you would say was a little more heartbreaking for you?
For me, I'd have to go with Jordy Nelson, mainly because it just came as a real surprise to me. Whereas the Clay Matthews thing, you could see it coming. But the Jordy Nelson was just a bit of a shocker to me. And, you know, he was Mr. Green Bay, fan favorite, you know. It was tough to – it was a heartless NFL move, but one that gets made every day in the NFL. But when it affects somebody that's popular, I think it hits home a little bit more. But so for me, I think I'd go with Jordy Nelson.
And I know you listed several different options on here, and I know it had to happen. But the one that hit me the hardest was probably Charles Woodson. Yes, he was at the end of his career, but I was very sad to see him go. That one hurt.
Yeah, that was a good one, actually.
And then there's Reggie White.
Another one.
And then we're going back another generation. But a lot of people always think of him as a Packer, but he didn't finish his career here, and we just let him go.
He didn't even play the majority of his career in Green Bay. I think I'll go back even another generation for me, but I think one of the hardest ones was probably my first idol. As a kid who first got into the Packers, and you know, this was my idol, and that was, of course, James Lofton.
Yeah, that was another hard one.
You know, when he went off, I think he went off to the Raiders too, didn't he?
Raiders, and then
ended up with the Bills for a while. But yeah, that was rough watching him go, because number 80 was, you know, especially in those early 80s, and they had that high powered offense in 82 and 83, and man, you just loved watching him play. He really was a transcendent player.
They couldn't make the playoffs, but that offense was spectacular to watch.
It was. It was, definitely. So, and that'll take us to the end of the fourth quarter, and let's get on to this week's Packers game predictions.
Cheesehead Radio, Packers game predictions.
All right, it's some weird deja vu for the Packers. They go from 1 week playing against Tom Brady, and then the next week, playing against the Patriots. We're so used to the two being together. Right. They're not together anymore.
They're kind of off kilter. Something's off kilter right? Yeah.
It's kind of surreal. It's a little Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. And the Patriots are definitely not the same team without him. Brian Hoyer, who steps in for an injured Mac Davis,
Mac Davis played for Alabama. I totally know who he was.
Sure. As the Packers host New England at home in another later afternoon tilt. Interestingly enough, the Packers opened up as 5.5-point favorites, and the line moved quickly.
Breakneck speed.
Yeah, so the Packers are now actually favored by 10.5 points. That may even be changed from there.
That's when the words came out that Mac Jones wasn't going to be able to play. Right. That's when the line moved.
Right. So huge 10.5-point favorites in this game. Here are our predictions for the game. Jersey, as always, we'll start with you.
As always, not always, but today, yes. All right. Well, since my record when picking against the Packers is pretty horrendous, I'm tempted to do it again, but I just can't. Having said that, this could totally be one of those human nature letdown games after a big win. After giving the players a couple of days off and just a walkthrough today, LaFleur better be all business and on top of his players the rest of the week to make sure they don't just expect a cakewalk against a Patriots team missing their starting quarterback. The Packers will win this game comfortably, but most likely in a not that impressive a fashion. Packers 24, Patriots 13.
Packers made Brady tantrum, but it still feels weird. You're right about not facing him this week in Foxborough. In Lambeau. Yeah, my mistake. This team is a shadow of what it used to be, but I wouldn't sleep on the Pats either. It's going to be a good game. Al has them barely beating the spread, but the Pack will emerge victorious, and Belichick will be moving on to the Lions. So I'm going to say Packers 31, Patriots 17.
Packers at home versus Brian Hoyer. I mean, if Bill Belichick pulls this one out, he's a miracle worker. And in reality, Bill Belichick might actually be a miracle worker. But for this game, he's miracle whipped. Packers 27, Patriots 14.
All right.
And just a reminder, who is...
What was this? You have a reminder? Kelly, I think it's time for the closing credits, Kelly.
All right, No.
What are the standings right now for predictions thus far?
God, he's going to gloat, isn't he?
Yeah.
I will point out I'm in 2-1, and I'm very happy with where I stand.
That's good, because you're not the worst. Which no.
Is Al. That would be Al. Al is wrong.
But I'm glad to be wrong last week. Very glad. And you're welcome, everybody, because whenever I pick against the Packers, they win. So you're welcome.
Meanwhile, CD Angeli is the obnoxious winner.
Yeah, undefeated. That's right. Well, there's a lot of
obnoxious.
A lot of season. Before we go, I just had one more highlight here. Aaron Rodgers was asked on the McAfee show this week if he's ever called plays. I said, how do you think he'd be doing as a play caller? You think he'd call the offensive plays? And Rodgers responds, I actually have been an offensive coordinator for a game before. I called a lot of Matt Flynn's 2011 Week 17 game, which you remember Matt Flynn had an absolute through the roof game against the Lions.
Six touchdowns.
Like record breaking game.
That got him a heck of a nice contract that he's living off of the rest of his life.
Yeah, he is a multimillionaire several times over because of that one game.
So,
as they posted it on the Twitter, Matt Flynn decided to respond to the idea that Aaron Rodgers pretty much made Matt Flynn's record-breaking game. Matt Flynn's response, I had to audible out of most of them.
Oh, my God. I love Matt Flynn so much. Maddie, if you're listening, we would love to have you on the show sometime because you're absolutely hilarious.
Very funny.
Good stuff. All right.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 13th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can listen to several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers podcasts can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the pod, show us some love and leave us a review. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying, Play Packers Talk Podcast. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them across the street from Lambeau Field or on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap. We have a home game this weekend, boys. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you next week.
Go Pack Go.
Tomo, Wisconsin. The weather as of now at 8:20 p.m. is 47 degrees clear with a high of 58 and a low of 32 degrees. Today's lunch at school today was chicken nuggets and a breadstick, pizza, chicken sandwich, hamburger, or salad with a sub. Subscribe for more at Cheesehead Radio.
Cheesehead Radio. Oh, boy.
Wow, chip off the old block there.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So, no,